Welcome to Sonic Lit, a spoken web radio show. My name is Catherine McLeod, and usually I'm joined with co-host Jason Camelot. He's not here today, so it is me, solo in the booth. And I'm excited for what I have to play for you this afternoon, because it is April. It's Poetry Month. And, well, on Sonic Lit, let's face it, it's always Poetry Month. And if you happen to be listening to this show after, perhaps on a replay, it can still be Poetry Month for you too. But because we do the show live from the studio at CGLO on the Loyola campus of Concordia, we are celebrating it being April Poetry Month. So I have some poems to play for you this afternoon. So it's always a question of how to choose the poems that we're going to play. And today, to make my selection, I thought, well, what are the poetry CDs that I have at home? Sometimes Jason and I, when we decide, what are we going to draw from, which recordings are we going to play, we'll sort of choose a collection, or sometimes like some CDs from the Amp Lab, or we'll dive into a particular archival collection. So in this case, I thought, well, what poetry CDs do I have in my house? And I have quite an eclectic collection, starting off with a CD that actually Jason Camelot gave to me. So I thought this would be appropriate to start things off, and also to say that, Jason, you're here even if you're not here for today's show. So this is a CD. It happened to be in Jason's office, so it wasn't one that he particularly thought, let's give this one to Catherine. But it was in his office. It caught my attention because I had just been teaching the poet P.K. Page. And I saw, there's a recording of P.K. Page sitting on a chair here. And it was a CD. We tend to play CDs on this show, kind of diving back into some older media. And this one is called P.K. Page, The Filled Pen, and it's poems read by the author P.K. Page. So let's start off our Poetry Month show with one of these poems by P.K. Page. This means that I'm going to be adjusting the CD player and making sure that I get things right to the right track. I think this should be good. Let me just double check. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And because this CD has a few tricks, it's actually one track ahead. Here we go with her poem, Stories of Snow. And I'm going to pause that. I knew I couldn't get it on the first try here. Let's try that one more time.
Stories of Snow.
All right, here we go.
Those in the vegetable rain retain an area behind their sprouting eyes, held soft and rounded with the dream of snow, precious and reminiscent as those globes, souvenir of some never, never land, which hold their snowstorms circular, complete, high in a tall antique wood cabinet. In countries where the leaves are large as hands, where flowers protrude their fleshy chins and call their colors, an imaginary snowstorm sometimes falls among the lilies. And in the early morning, one will waken to think the glowing linen of his pillow, a northern drift, will find himself mistaken and lie back weeping. And there the story shifts from head to head of how in Holland, from their feather beds, hunters arise and part the flakes and go forth to the frozen lakes in search of swans. The snowlight falling white along their guns, their breath in plumes. While tethered in the wind, like sleeping gulls, ice boats wait the raising of their wings to skim the electric ice at such a speed they leap jet strips of naked water. And how these flying, sailing hunters feel air in their mouths as terrible as ether. And on the story runs that even drinks in that white landscape dare to be no color, how flasked and water clear the liquor slips silver against the hunter's moving hips. And of the swan in death, these dreamers tell of its last flight and how it falls, a plummet, pierced by the freezing bullet, and how three feathers, loosened by the shot, descend like snow upon it, while hunters plunge their fingers in its down, deep as a drift, and dive their hands up to the neck of the wrist, in that warm metamorphosis of snow, as gentle as the sort that woodsmen know, who, lost in the white circle, fall at last and dream their way to death. And stories of this kind are often told in countries where great flowers bar the roads with reds and blues, which seal the route to snow, as if, in telling, raconteurs unlock the color with its complement and go through to the area behind the eyes, where silent, unrefractive whiteness lies.
That was P.K. Page reading the poem Stories of Snow. You're listening to Sonic Lit, a spoken web radio show, and my name is Catherine McLeod here at CGLO 1690. We're listening to poetry for Poetry Month, and we're listening to a recording of P.K. Page. It's a disc that I got from Jason Camlett, the co-host of this show, who is usually here with me. When he gave me the CD, I was really interested to hear the voice of P.K. Page and how she read these poems, especially later on in her life. And I was particularly interested in the fact that it had a recording of the piece called Address at Simon Fraser. It's the second to last piece, and it's followed by the poem Planet Earth. And this piece is, it's called an address. It was given as a speech at Simon Fraser University, but it's also published in her book of poems, Planet Earth. And it's a piece that really speaks to the question of why make art now? What can it do for our world? And it's a piece that I was really excited to hear out loud, because always when seeing it in her books of poetry, you kind of imagine what it would be like to hear it as an address out loud, especially imagining an audience, imagining an audience not at a poetry reading, but listening to an address at a convocation ceremony where, you might think, is this poetry? Is this not poetry? And in fact, if we listen all the way to the end, Paige reflects on that a little bit herself. It is a long piece, but it builds as it gets towards the end, and the last lines of it really have stayed with me, and I wonder if they will stay with you as well when you listen to them. I think it's a piece to listen to this month in April for Poetry Month, a piece to hold on to and reflect upon and maybe carry these words with us as we move about the world. So we're going to listen to Address at Simon Fraser, followed by Planet Earth, and then we'll make a shift into some other poetic sounds. So, me and the CD player, are we going to get it to the right track? Here we go. Let's find out. First, I have to move it all the way to the end. And as you heard before, this CD is a little tricky. It's not numbered quite correctly. So we'll give it a try and see if we're at address at Simon Fraser. Here we go. P.K. Page, Address at Simon Fraser.
Address at Simon Fraser. Should I part my hair behind, or dedicate my whole life, or my half-life, if you will, to lobbying politicians? What a fate, or making speeches, which I rarely do. Polemics, mercy. I was never good at argument or logic, never felt the writer had a role beyond the role of writing what he, she must write. But if the whole great beautiful caboodle hangs in the balance, do you remember how celestial our planet looked from space, and how the astronauts who saw it small, floating above, below them like a ball, thrown to delight a child, return to view their world transformed. Beauty is in the eye. Is hell then heaven, if we see it so? And they, the astronauts, transformed as well. And if our future here is unconfirmed and we are on probation, maybe I must change my tune, my scale even, and try some left-brain reasoned thinking, learn to write well-argued dissertations and forget poetry and the arts I love. And yet I can't believe it. Surely art is more important than it ever was before. Before? Before what? Curious how we wear binary blinkers, BC and AD. Even our global history can be pre, which shows we see it finite, as if we, Homo sapiens, had invented it. It all began with us, like love and sex. We are such one-eyed kings or one-eyed jacks. There are no one-eyed queens. Go check your packs. Surely our break with nature is the source of all that's out of kilter, out of sync. How can a city dweller visualize a world unpavemented, unstreet lamped, or imagine how the constellations shine as night ingathers earth and sets alight the topaz pole star pulsing in the north, front runner of vast galaxies that stretch, clustered in patterns like huge honeycombs? And how can youngsters who have never seen a seed by slow degrees become a shoot conceptualize, except in their own loins, the force that through the green fuse drives the flower? A city boy I know won't eat a pear picked from a green, unsanitary tree, balks at the thought of it, prefers the bland, an unsun-ripened supermarket fruit, refrigerated, plastic-wrapped, germ-free. Is he the symbol of an age that's lost its evolutionary memory? But to get back to art, for there my heart is, there beyond materiality, beyond the buy and sell, beyond the want embedded in us, and beyond desire, resides the magic greed has cancelled out. If we'll but give it time, a work of art can rap and knock and enter in our souls and realign us, all our molecules, to make us whole again. A work of art could, had we but world enough and time, portray for us all paradise apart, the face we had before the world was made, or to compound the image, vivify Plato's invisible reality. But is there time enough? This turning world we call our home, or Notre Pays, could become inimical to humankind, human unkind, as Cummings might have said, in fewer years than I have walked this earth. So what is there to tell you? Only this. Imagination is the star in man. Read, woman, if you wish. And though we are trapped in the body of an animal, we are half angelic, and our angel ear, which hears the music of the spheres, can hear the planet's message, dark, admonishing, as the archaic torso of Apollo admonished Rilke, you must change your life. Art and the planet tell us, change your life. It was very interesting when I did that convocation address, because it was at Simon Fraser, and one or two of the people in the English department knew about it because I'd run it past them, because I thought it might be a bit long, and yet I didn't know how to cut the damn thing, and they said, go for it. So I started reading it just exactly as if it was an ordinary convocation address. And then you suddenly saw people recognizing that this was verse. It was wonderful to see sort of lights going on all over the place.
Feeling overwhelmed by the state of the world? You're not alone. Join Mosaic for How to Choose Between Apathy and Empathy in an Overwhelming World, a workshop designed to help you navigate burnout, cultivate compassion, and balance your mental and emotional well-being. Join us on April 11th at the Hall Building. For more info, visit our website at mosaic.org.
Hi, this is BB Club, and you're listening to CJLO at Concordia University. Enjoy.
Planet Earth. Pablo Neruda wrote a poem in praise of ironing. Four of the lines are, it has to be spread out, the skin of this planet, has to be ironed, the sea in its whiteness, and the hands keep on moving, smoothing the holy surfaces. It has to be loved the way a laundress loves her linens, the way she moves her hands, caressing the fine muslins, knowing their warp and woof, like a lover coaxing or a mother praising. It has to be loved as if it were embroidered with flowers and birds and two joined hearts upon it. It has to be stretched and stroked. It has to be celebrated. Oh, this great beloved world and all the creatures in it. It has to be spread out, the skin of this planet. The trees must be washed and the grasses and mosses. They have to be polished as if made of green brass. The rivers and little streams with their hidden cresses and pale-colored pebbles and their fool's gold must be washed and starched or shined into brightness. The sheets of lake water smoothed with the hand and the foam of the oceans pressed into neatness. It has to be ironed, the sea in its whiteness, and pleated and goffered, the flower blue sea, the protean wine dark gray green sea with its meters of satin and bolts of brocade, and sky such an O overhead. Night and day must be burnished and rubbed by hands that are loving, so the blue blazons forth and the stars keep on shining within and above, and the hands keep on moving. It has to be made bright, the skin of this planet, till it shines in the sun like gold leaf. Archangels then will attend to its metals and polish the rods of its rain. Seraphim will stop singing hosannas to shower it with blessings and blisses and praises. And newly in love, we must draw it and paint it, our pencils and brushes and loving caresses smoothing the holy surfaces.
That was PK Page reading Planet Earth. You're listening to Sonic Lit, and I'm Catherine McLeod playing poems for you in Poetry Month. So the theme was poetry CDs in my house. And we've been listening to a disc of PK Page's poems, but we're going to make a shift to a disc of Paul Dutton's Mouthpieces. This is a CD that I got in the mid 2000s. I'd heard Paul Dutton out at UBC when I was a master's student, and ended up hearing him many, many times in Toronto later. But this was a CD that really caught my attention. We've actually played a piece of Paul Dutton's poetry on this show before, but this one is it's a short classic piece that you might recognize what he's doing. Think of this poem as a sonnet.
Bria, 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 briu, 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 briur, briur, briur. harder. Buddy shoo shoo shoo, buddy shoo shoo shoo, buddy shoo 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 shoo, buddy shoo, buddy shoo, buddy shoo, buddy shoo, buddy shoo shoo, buddy shoo shoo shoo. Chitty brrr, chitty brrr, chitty brrr, chitty ah, chitty ah, chitty ah, chitty pa, chitty pa, chitty pa 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 pa, chitty ooh, chitty ooh, chitty ooh, choo bitty urr, chitty brrr, bitty ah, bitty ah, bitty you, bitty urr, oh.
All right, that was Paul Dutton. And we're going to continue on with sound. This one is a poem by Toronto poet, shifting from Vancouver to Toronto, and thus where I acquired this CD. I got it from Lillian Allen herself. This is Lillian Allen's disc called Anxiety, and it has a number of, you know, it even has a poem called My Toronto Poetic Gesture. We're not going to hear that one, but we are going to hear Poem for Billie Holiday. I thought this would be an appropriate Poetry Month poem, and also just to hear the exploration and sound that Lillian Allen's doing contrasted with what we just heard from Paul Dutton. So here we go with another CD, Lillian Allen, Poem for Billie Holiday.
Poem for Billie Holiday. Holiday. Oh, Billy, you lived in your drawl. Sound swirling out of black. Rainbow splintering through deceptions of grace to your omniscient blues. Rainbow splintering. So full of self, of music in your face, proud. Passions burst into words. Pride aches and heartbeat. And slow defiance, note by note. Bess's swing converges. Louis Armstrong blowing language. Breaking words apart. Scat, scat, scat. Scattering soul all over art. All over American culture. Billy's lips give shapes and hues to longing. Mediation on deep spirit, on pain of being, elusive love, motions in the blood, fire and history from the bones. Billy's voice, a poet's ease, and all that sass.
Billy's voice, a poet's ease,
sass.
Billy's
voice, a poet's ease, and all that.
Billy's voice, a poet's ease,
and all that sass, and all that sass,
poem for Billie Holiday,
and all that sass.
That was Lillian Allen, Poem for Billie Holiday. And that was off an album called Anxiety. Lillian Allen has a number of poetry albums. This one is, it's yellow. With I say this because I'm holding it here right in front of me. And it has Anxiety then in this big red lettering. But Lillian Allen's name, I'll print it in a really neat kind of visual poem on the front. If you happen to follow, the social media for Spoken Web, because this is Sonic Lit, a Spoken Web radio show. If you follow Spoken Web on social media, I'll be posting a photo of the discs that I'm playing this afternoon. Again, if you happen to be listening to this show on a replay, well, maybe you'll find the photo somewhere in the archive. So yes, you're listening to Sonic Lit, a Spoken Web radio show, and we're playing some cool discs that I just happen to have at home that are poetry discs. They're all CDs, and they're kind of taking you a bit of on a journey across Canada in some ways, and a history of me acquiring poetry CDs at various places in my and moments in time in my life. So this one is, it is a bit of a story in and of itself. I won't dive into the full story of how I got this disc and its significance, but I'll just hint at some of the possible directions for those stories. So this disc is features poetry in Spanish. It is poetry put to music, and it's poetry by the Spanish poet Federico García Lorca. It's a disc that I've had for a long time, but I've also listened to a lot of flamenco. So yes, this is flamenco, flamenco music that have been different adaptations of Lorca's poetry. So, you know, this is one of many, but I thought this was a great one to bring in because when thinking about really poetry discs and poetry and music, it takes us to another place. I do dance myself, so a little hint at another direction this story could go. The first one, you might recognize it. It's probably Federico García Lorca's most well-known poem set to music. It's called Verde. That translates to green. And it's on this disc. And we're going to hear this one, a song for Poetry Month. And I think it speaks to the green starting to sprout from the earth, in many ways kind of taking us back to P.K. Page speaking about the planet. So here we go.
Sobre la mar, el caballo, la montaña, verde, que yo te quiero verde. Con la sombra en la cintura, ella sueña en su baranda, verdes ojos, negro pelo, su cuerpo de fría plata, verde, que yo te quiero verde, sí, sí, yo te quiero verde. Te quiero cambiar mi caballo por tu casa, mi montura por tu espejo, mi cuchillo por tu manta, verde, que yo te quiero verde, sí, sí, yo te quiero verde, ya, ya, yo te quiero verde. Compadre, vengo sangrando desde los puertos de Cabra. Si yo fuera mocito, este trato lo cerraba, verde, que yo te quiero verde. Compadre, ¿dónde está? Dime, ¿dónde está esa niña amarga? ¿Cuántas veces la esperé? ¿Cuántas veces la esperaba, verde, que yo te quiero verde? Sí, sí, yo te quiero verde. Sobre la mar, el caballo, la montaña, verde, que yo te quiero verde, sí, sí, yo a ti te quiero verde, ya, ya, yo a ti te quiero verde.
That was Verde, a poem by Federico García Lorca. and it was performed there by Manzanita. This is off a CD that is a compilation of artists who have performed Lorca's poetry. It's called Los Gitanos Cantan a Federico García Lorca. It's a CD that I've had for a long time, one of the many poetry discs that I've carried with me from place to place. We are listening to poetry discs from my house here on Sonic Lit, a spoken web radio show. I'm Catherine McLeod. I'm usually joined by Jason Camelot. He's not here today, so I'm just going with it with the poetry discs from home. So we're actually going to listen to one more track from this same disc as a bit of a segue into our next poet. And I'm going to save that segue for after we hear this song, because it's going to take us back into Canadian poetry, because we were in Canadian poetry with P.K. Page, Paul Dutton, Lillian Allen, and then we headed to early 20th century Spanish poetry with Lorca. And now, afterwards, we're going to think about its influence on Canadian poetry yet again. But before that, a nice way to shift into that is to also say, well, you know, the poem that we just heard by Lorca, it was a poem set to music. It was maybe a bit more of a traditional sound to the song itself. I'm not going to dive into the flamenco rhythm, but it was in a 4/4 beat, a little more recognizable. The track that we're going to hear next is another Lorca poem, but it is. It became really a touchstone moment in flamenco because it was performed by Camarón, and it was on an album in which he did all Lorca poems throughout. The whole concept for this album was Lorca poetry, Lorca's poetry. And it was also a disc that was about changing the sound of flamenco, so flamenco could have instruments that weren't traditionally associated with the musical form. So, this is about kind of pushing the limits of the form and transforming the sound into nuevo flamenco. It is another Lorca poem, so thinking that, you know, at the heart of this is poetry. It's called La Leyenda del Tiempo, and we are going to listen to this off that same disc, which means I'm going to make a little move on the disc and get it to the right track, and that in fact should work. So here we go with Nuevo Flamenco with La Leyenda del Tiempo by Camarón. And then we'll be moving from this into Canadian poetry. How will we do it? Stay tuned to find out.
si el sueño fríe en muros, en la llanura del tiempo, en la llanura del tiempo, el tiempo la seca.
You're listening to Leyenda del Tiempo, as sung by the legendary flamenco singer Camarón. And he was singing the words of Lorca, the poet. And the music was Nuevo Flamenco. So the question is how we're going to move from flamenco back into Canadian poetry for my last disc that I'll be playing for you today. So our last disc is Janswiki Reads. Janswiki, Canadian poet, philosopher. How do we move from flamenco to Janswiki? Well, it so happens that Janswiki is a poet with whom flamenco artists out west in Victoria, BC have been collaborating with. The group Palabra Flamenco has been collaborating with Janswiki and performing a number of pieces. They've been calling these pieces Dark Sounds, based, you know, really inspired by Lorca. And it's been really fascinating to listen from afar. I still have yet to attend one of these shows, but I have friends who have attended them and heard many, stories of what they are like. And Janswiki is a poet I've listened to for a long time and also even thought about dancing to. So it was fantastic to hear that flamenco artists are collaborating with her and performing some of her poems out west in Victoria. So Janswiki is the poet that we'll be listening to next. I have much to say about this disc, but first let's hear one of her poems that is really based on music.
Bill Evans, Here's That Rainy Day. On a bad day, you come in from the weather and lean your back against the door. This time of year, it's dark by 5. Your armchair empty in its pool of light. That arpeggio lifts like warmth from the 5th of B minor, offers its hand. Let me tell you a story. But in the same breath, semitones falling to the tonic, you must believe and not believe. That door you came in, you must go out again. In the forest, the woodcutter's son sets the stone down from his sack and speaks to it. And from nothing, a spring wells, falling as it rises, spilling out across the dark green moss. There is sadness in the world, it says, past telling. Learn stillness if you would run clear.
Hi, I'm Sydney Sheedy.
And I'm Piper Curtis.
We're the producers of Discordia, a 10-part audio docuseries for CJLO 1690 AM, funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada Radio Meters Program.
Tune in on Monday, April 7th at 6 p.m. for the 9th episode of Discordia, wherein we discuss the current state of organizing against Quebec tuition hikes announced in 2023.
Hey, this is Ariel from La Force. You're listening to CJLO, Concordia's underground radio.
Musicians. I pass a bunch of musicians in the street. It's about 12:30, rehearsal just over there, standing around outside the side door of the church. A good rehearsal, and it's April. They're laughing, horsing around, talking about shoes or taxes, where to go for lunch, anything except what their heads are full of. It's a kind of helplessness. You can see they're still breathing almost in unison, like people the searchlight has passed over and spared. Their attention lifts, swerves, settles, even the gravel dust stuttering at their feet is coherent.
You're listening to Jan's Wiki reading. That was a poem called Musicians, and it is from a disc called Jan's Wiki Reads. We're listening to this disc on Sonic Lit, a spoken web radio show. And this disc, there's a lot to say about it. First of all, the poem that we just listened to, that poem Musicians, and the previous poem that we heard just before the break was called Bill Evans' Here's That Rainy Day. Those are both poems that are describing musicians. And that was one of the reasons that I started to sort of tune in to Jan's Wiki's poetry back in the early 2000s out west in Vancouver. And I started noticing that her poems were about music, and not only about music, but trying to write music or write musicians' experiences with music, musicians practicing, musicians gathering outside after a rehearsal, as described in that poem, or after a show, talking about their performance. She also writes about musical pieces. So sometimes the poem will be called the name of the musical piece that inspires it. And I thought that was so fascinating, because then you have this, you have another art form that's inspiring the poem, and yet the poem is the poem. The poem isn't the music, and yet is the poem somehow aspiring to be music? Or, you know, is the poem aspiring to be the poem in music, and the poem as listening to the music? That's something else than the poem as being music. Jan's Wiki is a philosopher, so I think these questions were very much on her mind while she's writing these musical poems. The question of how can the poem be music, or how can the poem be the poem in the music? So we're going to listen to a longer poem on this recording, now that we've had a bit of a warm up to thinking about her poetry. It's a poem called The Geology of Norway, and it is a poem that is on this disc Jan's Wiki Reads, that I feel like it's a poem that kind of takes us into her thinking, into more of her philosophy, even more so than those first two poems that we listened to. So Jan's Wiki is reading The Geology of Norway on this recording, and we are listening to it right now. And we are not listening to it quite yet, but we are listening to it almost right now. All right, we are listening to it now.
The Geology of Norway. A poem about Ludwig Wittgenstein, with an epigraph from Ray Monk's biography. But when his last night in Norway came, on 10th December, he greeted it with some relief, writing that it was perfectly possible that he would never return. I have wanted there to be no story. I have wanted only facts. At any given point in time, there cannot be a story. Time, except as now, does not exist. A given point in space is the compression of desire. The difference between this point and someplace else is a matter of degree. This is what compression is, a geologic epoch rendered to a slice of rock you hold between your finger and your thumb. That is a fact. Stories are merely theories. Theories are dreams. A dream is a carving knife, and the scar it opens in the world is history. The process of compression gives off thought. I have wanted the geology of light. They tell me despair is a sin. I believe them. The hand moving is the hand thinking, and despair says the body does not exist. Something to do with bellies and fingers pressing gut to ebony, thumbs on keys. Even the hand writing is the hand thinking. I wanted speech like diamond because I knew that music meant too much. And the fact is, the earth is not a perfect sphere. And the fact is, it is half liquid. And the fact is, there are gravitational anomalies. The continents congeal and crack and float like scum on cooling custard. And the fact is, and you might think the fact is we will never get to the bottom of it, but you would be wrong. There is a solid inner core, 1,500 miles across, iron alloy. The pressure on each square inch of its heart is nearly 30,000 tons. That's what I wanted. Words made of that. Language that could bend light. Evil is not darkness, it is noise. It crowds out possibility, which is to say, it crowds out silence. History is full of it. It says that no one listens. The sound of wind and leaves, that was what puzzled me. It took me years to understand that it was music. Into silence. A gesture, a sentence, that it speaks. This is the mystery, meaning not that these folds of rock exist, but that their beauty, here, now, nails us to the sky. The afternoon blue light in the fjord. Did I tell you I can understand the villagers? Being, I have come to think, is music, or perhaps it's silence, I cannot say. Love, I'm pretty sure, is light. You know, it isn't what I came for, this bewilderment by beauty. I came to find a word, the perfect syllable, to make it reach up, grab meaning by the throat, and squeeze it till it spoke to me. I wanted language to hold me still, to be a rock. I wanted to become a rock myself. I thought if I could find and say the perfect word, I'd nail mind to the world and find release. The hand moving is the hand thinking. What I didn't know, even the continents have no place but earth. These mountains, once higher than the Himalayas, formed in the pucker of a supercontinental kiss when Europe floated south of the equator and you could hike from Norway down through Greenland to the peaks of Appalachia. Before Iceland existed, before the Mediterranean evaporated, before it filled again, before the Rockies were dreamt of, and before these mountains, the rock raised in them, chewed by ice that snowed from water in which no fish had swum. And before that ice, the almost speechless stretch of the Precambrian. 2 billion years, the planet swathed in air that had no oxygen, the Baltic shield, older, they think, than life. So I was wrong. This doesn't mean that meaning is a bluff. History, that's what confuses us. Time is not linear, but it's real. The rock beneath us drifts and will until the slow cacophony of magma cools and locks the continents in place. Then weather, light, and gravity will be the only things that move. And will they understand? Will they have a name for us, those perfect, changeless plains, those deserts, the beach that was this mountain, and the tide that rolls for miles across its vacant slope?
That was Jan Zwicky reading The Geology of Norway. It is recorded on the disc called Jan Zwicky Reads. So on Soniclet, usually it is hosted by myself, Catherine McLeod, and Jason Camelot. And usually there are two of us, usually. So today it's just me. And that means that I can't turn to Jason and say, what did you hear in that recording? What were you listening to? It's a great opportunity to be able to listen together when we're both here. But because it's me, I will ask myself what I was listening to there. And I couldn't help but notice some really particular phrases that either returned throughout that poem or really had great resonance with it. So I, you know, the phrase of any phrase that involved the word light. I started noticing that right from the beginning. She ends sort of the first, it is the first stanza, but it's kind of the first moment when she pauses by saying, "I have wanted the geology of light." And you kind of were wondering, like, what does she mean by that? And also, what is this "I have wanted"? Because we can notice too in that poem, her voice really builds with intensity as it moves closer and closer to what she is articulating as wanting. I do have the poem in front of me. I not only brought my stack of CDs, but I brought the Janzwicki book, Songs for Relinquishing the Earth, in which this poem, The Geology of Norway, appears. And so I can quote another passage that really did stand out to me when listening to that recording. The line being, "I have come to think, is music. Or perhaps it's silence. I cannot say. Love, I'm pretty sure, is light." And I noticed there the way that she suggests being, "I've come to think, is music." Also to separate, you know, she could just say being is music, but the idea that sort of her process, "I've come to think," that this is taking some time. She's come to think it's music, but then also the hesitancy, or perhaps it's silence. "I cannot say." And to articulate all of those things, that hesitation, the possibility that it could be both. But the thing that she's sure about is that, or pretty sure about, is that love is light. So then thinking, okay, every time light appears, we can also think about this not only sort of geology of light, but love as light. Wanting to be able to bend light. What then does that mean in this poem? The other line that really stood out was this line, "The hand moving is the hand thinking. What I didn't know, even the continents have no place but earth." The hand moving is the hand thinking. I thought that that line seemed to connect embodiment and thinking, embodiment and philosophy. You know, when I was suggesting earlier that it's not only like a poem about music, but a poem thinking about what it means to be a poem immersed in music, or a philosophy of music, or thinking about of sound through the poem. The idea of like the hand moving is the hand thinking. I'm thinking maybe like the poem moving is the poem thinking. So, you know, I suggest that as my takeaway from this poem. The poem moving is the poem thinking. So thank you for listening to that poem with me. I also think that it brings us back to the P.K. Page poems, especially the address at Simon Fraser, that line at the end about you must change. Art and the planet tell us you must change your life. You must change. Thinking about what, you know, how that poem speaks to art and the planet. So we're coming towards the end of Sonic Lit, spoken web radio show. I think perhaps we can hear one more poem of Janzwicki's. I've got it almost lined up here. Let's see. Yes, it's a short poem from this same disc. It's called Poppies.
Poppies. Some days the wall that separates us from the future is too thin. Standing in my mother's garden by the bed of poppies on the northwest slope, wind in the trees and the 5-mile sky billowing over us, I am caught again by their color, watercolor, sheer like ice or silk or, we imagine, freedom. Their petals on the ground collect in drifts, explosions of arterial light. Or perhaps it's that we are that membrane, an instant thick, days shine right through us as we charge around, looking for some explanation in what hasn't happened yet or what will never happen again. Like last night at dinner, glancing up at the picture, the one that's always hung there, the sudden, clear presentiment that I would live to walk into that dining room someday after the last death and find it waiting for me, the entire past dangling from a finishing nail. Poppies, what can they teach us? The windshot light fills them, and they are blind.
You've been listening to Sonic Lit. I was going to say Spoken Lit. Sonic Lit, a spoken web radio show. You've been listening to poems off of discs from my house this afternoon. Discs that I've carried with me as recordings of poems. And as always, a bit of a mix of poetry and music. El caballo, la montaña.